At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
The future, that's where our minds are at Western Illinois University Quad Cities. We are innovators, searching for something new outside of the textbooks. Dog-loving, leadership-driven, world-changing. Whether you choose to study on campus or online, your future is designed on your terms. Start your future at wiu.edu/QC.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.
A Supreme Court decision may change the way people look at homelessness and life here on the streets, but will it make any difference in the cities? It's a case that started in a city in Oregon, but it has far-reaching implications across the nation. The U.S. Supreme Court has basically issued somewhat of a ban on homelessness. The court's conservative majority ruling the ban did not violate the Constitution's prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment when it comes to penalizing people who sleep on city property, like the parks, the streets, the alleyways as well. The ruling comes at a time when America is seeing an increased number of homeless people all throughout society, as well as in the cities. And we talked to the executive director and president of Humility Homes and Services, Ashley Velez.
Were you at all surprised by the U.S. Supreme Court decision?
I would like to say no, but the current Supreme Court that we have, it is pretty much on par, in my opinion. If it would have been a different one, I wish I would have been shocked. But seeing the recent rulings that they've had, this seems to be on par with what they're ruling lately.
So I ask you then, what do you see as the long-term as well as the short-term impact of this ruling that once again pretty much allows municipalities to penalize the homeless for sleeping out on the streets?
Yeah, so it's short-term and long-term really coincide together. So the short term would be that you're going to see more individuals potentially being thought that they're doing encampments, because the ruling is very specific. It says that you have to have a pillow, a blanket, a newspaper, you know, something like that on a public property. And so some people, you know, it could also come down to that they're really not experiencing homelessness and really they're just, you know, out in a public domain, and the police may be able to use that as an implication that they are. That also means that we could also see an increase in the amount of people trying to come into shelter, and we don't have enough shelter beds in the Quad Cities for everybody who's currently experiencing homelessness. And then in the long term, also, you're going to see an impact on your tax dollars, honestly. For someone experiencing homelessness who's not doing anything wrong, they literally are just, we're in an affordable housing crisis in the country, you know, that they're just sleeping outside, not breaking the law, nothing like that, not bothering anybody. If they are going to be getting fines and potentially going to jail, I mean, you know, a night in a county jail is about $90 a day versus nothing if they're sleeping outside, and or if they're coming to a shelter or supportive housing, it's about $26 a day.
You did point out that you were somewhat disappointed that it was a conservative Supreme Court that made that decision, but this was an interesting group of people who really favored this, including some very liberal mayors of liberal cities.
There were some ones of liberal cities. I believe in that instance, with it comes to the liberal cities, that it's because they've seen such an increase in homelessness and lack of affordable housing. I mean, the biggest reason why we have such a boom in homelessness right now is the housing crisis and lack of affordable housing and living wages. And so if they did support that notion, that also lets them put a little bit more pressure on those harder to house individuals. I mean, we have them locally here where some individuals just don't want housing. They're just not ready for it, or they don't want it. And so this would then help some homelessness advocates, be able to say like, hey, you could get a fine, you could get a ticket, like, please work with us. But that number is so small that around here it won't have that big of an impact.
And I do want to talk more about that because you're kind of talking about a bit of a carrot and a stick situation right there. Is that, just to use something like a penalty as a looming reason to get somebody into a shelter? And I do want to talk about that in a moment. But let me stay with the Supreme Court for another moment. And that is that Justice Gorsuch had written that, and this is pretty much what it all came down to with the Supreme Court decision, was that it is not cruel and unusual punishment. To force the homeless off the streets, even if you're not providing an alternative shelter. That's an interesting interpretation of the clause of cruel and inhuman punishment. And how do you interpret that when it comes to homelessness?
To me, I'll be honest, I don't see how it's not cruel and unusual punishment because, as it comes down to it, is there's not enough government assistance or there's not enough safety nets or places for people to go. And so, when it comes down to that, if you're not offering another option, especially with the elements in society, like cold, hot, that type of thing, how is it not ruled as that?
And it's a lot of people believe that you have a right to housing,
Yes, we do too.
fundamental right to housing.
Yep, it's actually mentioned within the United Nations decree that everybody has a right to that housing is a human right, and that everybody has a right to safe, secure housing of their choice.
Let me ask you another question having to do with the numbers. As you were pointing out, the record numbers of homelessness right now, and I'd like to get a little more into that. What I saw was record numbers of people entering homelessness systems for the first time. This is according to HUD, about 18,000 people a week. How come things aren't getting better, and why is that number perhaps not so surprising to you?
It's not surprising to us as we've kind of seen the writing on the wall for the last, few years. HUD issues something called fair market housing. So fair market housing means that the rates in your area should be about X number dollars based off of, there's a certain amount for efficiencies, one bedrooms, two bedrooms, that sort of thing. They do fair market housing based off of cost of living, cost of like, goods and services, taxes, a variety of different things, how they get fair market value. So 2 years ago, a one bedroom was 660. This past year, it jumped up to 733 is how much fair market value is for a one bedroom. 733, that's a huge significant jump, especially for individuals who are, living on Social Security disability, living on, supplemental Social Security. They're getting $800 a month. Like, how are you can't even afford that at all, or even if you could afford it, landlords, since there's a sparsity of housing and landlords really have a lot of the control, landlords would just say, well, you don't make two to three times the rent, we're going to deny you. But HUD says we could charge this, but the average one bedroom around here above HUD is like 880 is what the average one bedroom is going for. But Iowa's minimum wage has not gone up. Illinois's minimum wage has gone up, but inflation has hit everywhere. Inflation, I know I saw the other day, is starting to go down a little bit, but you're not seeing that in the housing arena or the housing market that it's going down. So the National Low Income Housing Coalition issued a report that in Iowa, you have to work, it's 52 or 54 hours a week just to meet the needs for a two bedroom housing. I mean, that's crazy. Illinois is a little bit lower in number, but it's not still at 40 hours. It's still above that.
And you work with people constantly. So, I mean, I would assume that you're seeing people that just simply can't catch up, so to speak.
Correct. They just can't catch up. The housing, food has gotten more expensive, gasoline, price of services. And so you're choosing, do you pay for food or do you pay for this or pay for your housing? And since there's so much of a scarcity of even affordable housing, landlords can be a little bit choosier, even though there are fair housing standards, they still can set other parameters to try to keep people from not being housed. Locally, it's about 551 individuals are experiencing homelessness in a shelter or on the streets on any given night. That's from our last federal point in time count.
And give me an idea of what that means. Is that just on the Iowa Quad Cities? Is that just Davenport, or is that the entire Quad
Nope,
City?
that's the entire Quad City. So it's both Scott County and Rock Island County. It's about that number.
How have you seen those numbers increase or decrease, especially since the pandemic? Because it seems like that's one of those touchstone moments in society where everything changed for everybody.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing locally, we're seeing an increase in family homelessness. That's where we're seeing more of the increase, because the 2-3 bedroom apartments, going for $1,100, $1,200, $1,300, you see, childcare resources, not a lot of people are accepting people's second shift or third shift, or there's long wait lists, months wait lists for someone to get their child into daycare, even in first shift. So as a family that has to work multiple jobs, even at some point, there's not enough childcare. And so what are you supposed to do? So they're losing income because they don't have childcare. So it's really a trickle down effect too.
And tell me a little bit more about the shelters that are available, because so often you'll have shelters just for men and shelters just for women and children. Are there shelters for entire families? Is it possible for families to stick together during a period of time like this?
Yes and no, because the shelters are generally at capacity. So there's a list called coordinated entry where people can get, you have to get on this list in order to get any type of housing resources. Some local shelters also pull people off this list for those who are in need of shelter capacity. So at Humility Homes, we have an 80-bed all-gender shelter. There's Christian Care, which I believe is at 40. So generally, if you're looking at it, there's maybe 250, 250 beds in the Quad Cities of housing. But the last at a coordinated entry list, which is individuals who are experiencing homelessness that need some type of housing intervention, we pull people off this list, but it gives you and the government a look at what is our actual numbers at this point, a snapshot week by week of who's experiencing homelessness. And the last count, it was 298. So there are more people on the coordinated entry list than there are shelter beds in the Quad Cities.
And to what extent is that adults broken down between adults and children?
That is all households. So that is head of household. So that is all adults. So then children can be a variety in there. So that doesn't include children. That's just 298 adults who are waiting that are considered head of household. So their household could be them and a spouse, them and kids, that type of thing, them and a child.
It is, I think for some people, homelessness is not something that they necessarily see if they don't see a person on the streets. When you're talking about people that are homeless and don't go to a shelter, where generally do they go then? I mean, are they sleeping in cars? Are they in like vans? Are they sleeping in makeshift tent cities? What's going on in the cities?
All of the above. A lot of it will be sometimes you've got doubled up households, which that doesn't even include in the coordinated entry number. Living in cars, sleeping on the river, in downtown areas. Humility Homes and Services, we do have a street outreach team and they cover both sides of the river. And so it sounds exactly like, it says they're out on the streets meeting with people. Individuals sleep in encampments kind of hidden in the woods. They sleep in some parks along the bike paths. And so we go out to try to, one, capture the numbers so we know who's actually out there. And then two, to be able to offer services and be able to provide that support. A lot of times some people won't come into shelters because their mental health is too bad. They can control the environment better if they're living in the elements or living in the car versus coming into a shelter environment too.
And that leads me to the question that you had mentioned a little bit earlier, is that there's a belief that there's a lot of people who are homeless because they want to be homeless. And there is that, mental health element to this, because as you alluded to, some people just don't fit well into the strictures of a homeless shelter, because you have rules in place, and some people might not be able to fit into that. So tell me a little bit about that fact that some people just simply don't do well in shelters, or that they just don't want the help.
Yeah. So we have rules. We're a low barrier shelter model. So that means that we accept, and we're the only one in the Quad Cities that does this, where we accept them into the shelter if they're under the influence of alcohol or something, but they're able to, maintain themselves. They don't have to be on their mental health meds. We help people where they're at. And so with that housing first approach and housing, person centered, we still see people that won't come in. Generally, it's because of mental illness that being inside is untreated mental illness, that it's too much to be in parameters in closed doors. And in the community, we also have longer wait lists for mental health centers for someone to get in to receive services. So that's a barrier. Other times it's people just, you know, they want the free will and want to be able to be outside and live how they want to live. Because, you know, if you have a home, I don't tell you what to do in your home. You don't tell me what to do in my home. So they see it as the same way, that they don't feel like they should. But for the safety of everyone, we have to have parameters and we have to have rules in place. Otherwise, it could become unsafe and we can't have that either. It really is a fine balance.
And you said that you have outreach teams that do go out and try to help people. But more often than not, it's your first responders. It's your police agencies that are the first that are really on the front lines of dealing with homelessness day in and day out. Can you give me a little bit of an idea of how you're working with police agencies and whether or not the Supreme Court ruling you think is going to change the way police agencies and local municipalities in the cities actually deal with homelessness?
So all of the police forces with Davenport, Moline, East Moline, Rock Island, Bettendorf, we have a really great working relationship with them. It's taken a lot of conversations and understanding, and we even have a great relationship with like the city maintenance and like that type of thing. Because also it's, you know, the Parks and Rec, like they see a lot of the encampments before we're going to see them because they're out cleaning and taking care of them. So we have a policy that we work with all the municipalities, all the police forces, where they can bring someone experiencing homelessness to us versus taking them to jail. Because we definitely believe that you don't want to criminalize homelessness. And this law really does look at criminalizing homelessness as you're not providing any other solutions to someone. So they have that option with us where we'll take them in order for them not to go to jail just because they're experiencing homelessness, because they're trespassing or something of that nature. I am hopeful that we'll be able to continue that same process because we already have a good working relationship. I do believe that at times, you know, the police or even us, we may have to, you know, they may enact it if it's someone that has caused them problems, because police officers are still human, right? So if it's the same person you're seeing, you know, number 20 time, the 100th time, you could get frustrated and not offer that option. But I want to make sure that my team and I were still work at the police departments to say that we've got to be able to still offer services. Taking someone to jail is not the right solution. And I do have faith in the police departments knowing that we do that. I think that will still continue.
You think of homelessness, of course, and the impact on people worse during the winter months. But I mean, it's a problem that's year round. In your experience, is summer just as bad as winter?
Yes, summer you'll see more people outside because they're able to survive. The last point in time count in January, you know, when it was negative 20 degrees out, it was super cold. We still saw 8 people living outside. And then we do a point in time count in July. It's not required by the federal government, but as a local housing community, we want to know what does this actually look like. And last year's number, there was 47 individuals sleeping outside.
So you'll see
a higher number.
What do you see that is needs to be done then? I mean, because you are on the front lines and state government has a role, local government has a role, obviously the federal government has a role. What's the need that still isn't being met?
It's a kind of a twofold. There's a very long wait list for housing choice vouchers, which are Section 8 vouchers. You know, in America, if you are experiencing food insecurity and you're below a certain income, you can get food stamps. If you're below a certain income and need medical, you can get medical. But here, if you're below a certain income and need housing, you wait 5 to 6 years for a voucher to help you out. There's not enough low income places. And also the federal government, you know, has, especially the Veterans Administration, has funneled a lot of funding and different initiatives in to try to help housing. But unfortunately, our local governments are not completely on board. They still see it as they want to invest more in home ownership versus in the rental income and in rental housing. And so as a local housing agency working with the Quad City Housing Council and other advocates, we're meeting a lot with city officials to say, hey, you have a big responsibility in addressing this. When you look at other liberal cities, like you mentioned, and other cities, similarly as Milwaukee, Houston, Denver, the cities have taken the initiative to come up with innovative ways to address this housing population. And our cities aren't there yet. The city of Moline is probably the one that is the most willing to be innovative and look at it and be open to it because they've seen kind of the writing on the wall, for lack of better terms, and what they can do. And it's not only an investment in funding, it's an investment in innovative ways and zoning codes and things to come together as a team.
The Veterans Administration has been increasing its efforts to end homelessness
over absolutely.
The 2 years. Have you seen that firsthand? Is that working?
Yes, 100%. We created Functional Zero here in the Quad Cities for veterans during the pandemic, actually, in November of 2020. So that means that if somebody is experiencing homelessness, when they come in, they'll have a place to stay, sleep, and we'll be able to rehouse them. And it's because of the Veterans Administration intentional efforts with rapid rehousing dollars, shallow subsidy dollars, a variety of different ways to look at the whole person when it comes to their housing. And so the federal government through HUD is starting to do some of that as well, but they still haven't got as much innovative ones as like the Veterans Administration has done. We can do it though, because there are cities across the country. I mean, Rockford, for example, 2 hours from here, very similar in demographics, crime, all of that. They've brought homelessness for individuals and chronic homelessness to a functional zero along with veterans. So there is a system, but it needs local city buy-in to say, okay, we're going to do this together. And with this ruling, I'm hoping that the cities will finally say, yes, let's do it. We did receive county funding from Scott County through the American Rescue Plan. So we do have numbers to show that if you invest in supportive services and invest in supportive housing, your tax dollars go lower. But two, with that modeling, like we're getting people out of homelessness and into housing. So we even have local numbers to show because of the support from Scott County.
Do you think there is an upside then perhaps to the Supreme Court ruling? Is that there's more of a rally to do something?
I hope. I think there could be, if you have the right people in the right place to say, hey, now is the time. Like we've been forewarning you and having these conversations for at least the last 5-6 years. Well, now with this ruling, more could come. This is the most impactful ruling on housing and homelessness since the late 60s, I believe it is. Like this is the biggest one that will impact our work.
Our thanks to Ashley Velez, the president and chief executive officer of Humility Homes and Services in the Quad Cities. Well, Mo Carter has been busy performing all throughout the cities, making sure that her music hits the stage and your ears as well. We got to visit with her and she performed for us. So here she is, Mo Carter with Hardware Man.
Fades to time, slowly moves out of frame.
That's Mo Carter with Hardware Man, performed at the Black Box Theater in Moline. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.
At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
The future, that's where our minds are at Western Illinois University Quad Cities. We are innovators, searching for something new outside of the textbooks. Dog-loving, leadership-driven, world-changing. Whether you choose to study on campus or online, your future is designed on your terms. Start your future at wiu.edu/QC.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.